It is now 16 before 10, and we are very grateful to Dr. Martin Gill for sticking it through despite bad cell phone signals and all the challenges of a day and I guess a week full of media commentary to speak to us at this hour. Dr. Martin, thank you so much for your time and welcome.
Good evening.
A great pleasure, and we'll just jump straight into it. We spoke to Manzoor Sheikh Imam earlier. He's from the National Freedom Party. Where he comes into this was from a political side, taking a cue from this petition that has been signed by a number of doctors, including yourself, and trying to forward that from through political and perhaps legal processes as well. You are, as I understand, a signatory to this petition that's asking the health authorities to review this drug and consider it for usage in the treatment of COVID-19. Just explain to us, where do you fit into the broader campaign and exactly what's your role?
Well, it started about 4 weeks ago when I realized that I had a lot of knowledge about this drug because I've been selling it for nearly a year, and there were people dying. And this whole, everything that I'm doing is about the fact that people are dying and they don't have to. So I started with a talk on the same night that Dr. Pierre Corrie from America had a talk in South Africa, and that was the day SOPRA sent out that letter that was quite aggressive. And since then, the forces of life have just taken me on this journey. I've got to know the most phenomenal people, and we're working our way through the system to a point where hopefully we'll get ivermectin for the people.
Tell me, in terms of, I guess you wouldn't know each and every person who's lent their signature here, but sometimes the people, I don't know if that has been done or not, but sometimes people might create a perception that people who are issuing such calls perhaps are going against the science, are not with the mainstream, and perhaps playing to the tune of the public, perhaps might not agree or might not have agreed with the mainstream science stances or the science of the pandemic so far. People might float around terms like conspiracy theories, etc. I'm not sure if that has been done, but from your side, is there any truth in that?
Well, from our side, we basically, I'm with a group of people who we basically use the science of COVID and ivermectin. So we look at all the studies that have been done, we look at the assessments of them, and we make a decision whether it is if it's a good drug or not. And really, there's no other drug on the market that comes close to this. Initially, when towards the end of last year, there weren't very many good studies done on it, and SOPRA was using that as one of its excuses not to register it. But more recently, there are so many trials done. There are over 50. There's over 9,000 patients in the trials. There are a whole lot of randomly selected trials, which are the ones that the World Health Organization uses. And it's quite a remarkable drug in that just about every single trial shows that it works, and a very few show that it's as good as placebo. I think there are 3 or 4 of those, and there's virtually none that show it doesn't work. So you don't normally get that when you do a drug trial. And when you look down the line at the next set of trials that are going to be coming through, the ones that have completed now, looks like most of them are going to say it works. So at some point, someone's got to say this drug works, and it's unlikely it's not going to work because we're still looking for a trial that says it doesn't work. And all that's happening now is it's being delayed. And the way that I see things here is you're doing a risk-benefit analysis here, basically. So let's look at the drug. It's the safest drug in the world. It's had a Nobel Prize given to it because it's so safe. It's on the World Health Organization's essential drug list because it's so safe. And there's been 3.7 billion people use it. So, and with as far as we know, not more than one or two severe incidences. I think the severe incidents are less than one in a million. So there's no drug on the market that is that safe. So to me, your risk of allowing us to use this drug is virtually zero. The benefit, well, if we're all wrong and nothing happens, well, then a whole lot of people took a very cheap drug that did nothing to them. But if it works as well as it looks like it should work, we could be saving, according to the World Health Organization, 75% of deaths are avoidable with this drug. So take how many people are dying every night and remove three quarters of them. So if 200 die tonight, 150 could have been avoided if these stats are right. So wait another month and look how many thousands of people have died unnecessary. So I think at some point, I know there are rules around when SAHPRA is allowed to say yes and that, but in a pandemic and we have people dying and someone's got to stand up and say, okay, the day is today. We're allowing the drug to be used. The second problem is the longer doctors can't use the drug, the more this drug goes on to the black market and the more people are treating themselves. And that's going to eventually lead to all sorts of problems. It has to be back in the hands of medicine. We've got to have pharmacists dispensing drugs from known sources of known quality and doctors being able to intervene when, first of all, patients shouldn't be taking the medicine, or secondly, if they have complications.
Doctor, I want to play for you something that the chairperson of SAHPRA said earlier this week in conversation with 702 regarding the reasons that they've put forward for not approving this drug so far, and like your response after this.
Okay. So, Ben, well, first of all, yes. I mean, what we've done since the start of the pandemic is all around the world, people have looked at existing drugs because it's much better to take existing drugs and repurpose them if they're going to be active against COVID-19 rather than starting square nothing with a brand new drug. So a lot of work's been done on that, and there certainly was optimism for a number of drugs. Remember chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, similarly from the laboratory, a whole number of drugs looked very promising in the laboratory, and that gave rise to clinical trials. The problem with the trials that have been done to date for ivermectin, and these have been reviewed by numerous local committees independently with conclusions. I'll come back to that meta-analysis, but also other regulatory authorities and the World Health Organization. And the problem is with the data that we have so far is the studies were small. They were designed very differently, looking at different groups of patients, comparing to different types of comparisons, and quite a lot of the studies are seriously flawed in their design. And when you put a lot of studies that are small with different parameters together, even if you see a trend to positivity, you cannot conclude anything. And what we really need is what we're hoping to get soon is much larger, better designed studies where we can finally say, yes, there is an effect, or no, there isn't. And until we have that, we simply don't have enough data. And it's not only the regulatory authority that's saying this. There's a National Essential Medicines List Committee that's looked at all the data with a very definite methodology to review data. They have also said we need better data. And even in that meta-analysis that you say everyone is quoting, the conclusions of the author there was exactly the same, was to say from his point of view, he thought there was a trend, an encouraging trend, which is great if that is the case. But he also said we need better studies that are properly designed and randomized and bigger. So everyone is essentially saying the same thing. And if people can be patient, in a few weeks to 1 or 2 months' time, we are anticipating that we will get the data from those studies. And everyone, including regulatory authority, SAHPRA, has committed to look at that data as soon as we get hold of it.
So, Dr. Gill, the response from SAHPRA saying that the studies are still indefinite, and they say they're open to the to approving it and looking at the findings, provided that they are much more credible. Your response to that?
Okay, most of what you said is in fact right. So there's a lot of small trials, a lot of them not done that well, some very good trials, but if you take all these trials as individuals, you can't actually come to a conclusion. Now, we have a problem here because this is a drug that's completely out of patent, so no pharmaceutical company really can make money out of it. And in fact, Merck has been giving it to Africa for free for the last 20 years or so to get rid of some of these really horrible tropical diseases like river blindness. And they've literally got rid of scourges out of Africa. So it's not a medication that people can make money out of it, and therefore pharmaceutical companies are not prepared to put money into it to do big, decent trials. So we're stuck with what we've got. And there are some nice trials coming through even quite soon. Now, the problem is we've got 9,000 patients in all the trials, and they tend to only look at the good trials. But the not-so-well-done trials, where the who's ever doing it always seems to come out with exactly the same outcome, and that is ivermectin looks like it works very well. So what are we doing? We've got 50-odd trials now, all showing, most of them showing ivermectin works very well. And then we're going to get another 20-odd trials showing ivermectin works very well, because it seems like that's the way of the trend going. And if you ask anyone who's used it, that's what they expect the trend to go. So we can stick by the law and do exactly what they're doing now, and in 3 weeks to a few months' time, then register the drug. Or we can say we're in a pandemic, we're in a crisis. People are dying every day. Families are hurting. It's really, if you're a doctor, you see it far more than people in the general public, because it's all happening in the hospitals. At some point, someone's got to say, it's inevitable. And in my mind, it's inevitable. Somehow, it's got to become inevitable in their mind at some point.
Just one more clip here from Helen Rees, the chairperson of SAHPRA. I just want to play that, and we'll conclude the discussion straight after that.
Is there another thing that people are saying, this is the last aspect that I'll ask you to discuss, Helen, is that the reported side effects are really, particularly in moderate doses, that there are side effects reported in humans when very, very high doses are being given. But this thing is such low cost, and the side effects are essentially negligible. So at a time when other treatment regimens don't seem to be working well, what's wrong with the doctor slipping a couple of ivermectins down a patient's throat a couple of times a day for several days just to see?
Well, one of the problems that you see, that this isn't licensed for human use in South Africa. It's a drug that in our setting is very infrequently required for human use. So we don't have anyone who's applied for human use. It's really used for tropical diseases that are not common here. And the few occasions that we've given permission for its use, it's really for specific patients of specific unusual conditions. It's not licensed for human use. You have to ask, what is it that people are being given? It's licensed for veterinary use. So we know, we've heard reports that this veterinary product's being compounded, but we've also heard reports of importations. Now, the risk of this, if you don't have licensed products, is you actually have no idea what you're taking. So even if a doctor, I understand 100% that doctors are feeling desperate and they think they're doing no harm, might be doing a bit of good by offering this, but you actually don't even know if it's ivermectin. And it's that things that have been given haven't even had ivermectin in them, have had other products. And we also don't, you wouldn't even know what dosage you were giving. And we have had reports of overdose. All things together, what you really need is a licensed drug. And to get a licensed drug, even for emergency use, you need an applicant, and to have that, you need evidence. So let's wait a few weeks and see if this evidence comes through. And if that comes through, for sure, a cheap drug that is going to have benefit, even if it's limited benefit, would be welcomed by everybody.
All right. So there's, again, urging patients and saying that people, practitioners who might dispense this drug because of the uncertainties might be doing more harm. Your response to that, and also the way forward, given yourself as well as many of the other doctors who lend their voices to this, given the passion that you feel about this drug and the role that it can play in fighting the pandemic, what's the next step?
Once again, I mean, just about everything she said there is correct. But the reason we don't have human-grade medication in this country is because it needs to be registered by them. This drug needs to be made legal so that people can bring it into the country. And by them not doing it, exactly what she says is happening. It's on the black market. We don't know what's in the drugs. We don't know what we're giving to patients. We're not allowed to give it to patients because it's considered unethical, despite the fact the rest of the world sees it differently. We can't be in possession of it because it's criminal. So it's really a difficult problem. You then have large numbers of patients resorting to animal versions of this medicine. And some, I think, are very safe, but there are lots that have got medications in it. I don't even know what they are. So we have to have this whole process legalized so that they have control over what is being sold in this country and we can save lives. There's just, to me, I don't know how they can say there's no proof. There are epidemiological studies where there are cities in South America and in India where the government has gone and dished out ivermectin to everyone, and the second wave has just disappeared. Something killed off the virus, and if it wasn't ivermectin, I don't know what it was. And it happens from the day they start issuing the medication. So there's just so much evidence that it does have an effect against COVID-19. We lose nothing by using it, but we lose a lot if we are prescribing a drug that isn't controlled by SAHPRA. So they should be going in there and saying, okay, these are the safe drugs based on the criteria they use, and there are a lot of European pharmacy council that have already okayed the drugs, so we can use those as a start until SAHPRA registers the drugs for here. And there are a lot of safe drugs around the world. And I think that's got to happen quicker rather than taking the time waiting for trials to come, which I think are going to inevitably allow them to do it. Just people are dying. We've got to remember that every day we delay, people die.
Dr. Martin Keel, I thank you so much for your time at this hour and your contribution to this discussion. I much appreciate it, and we hope to catch up with you as the story develops. Thank you so much for your contribution.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. Thanks. Martin Keel joining us from Johannesburg. He's an ear, nose and throat specialist, but in the context of this discussion, he has joined this petition and has also been speaking quite vocally about why the government, the president, the health authorities should review the use of ivermectin to fight the coronavirus pandemic. Over 100 doctors have signed a petition, and that number, as we understand, is increasing. There's also a lot of pressure from a number of non-profit organizations, political parties, etc., on the government to urgently consider the use of ivermectin to turn the tide against the COVID pandemic.